Hey guys, welcome back to another exciting episode of Star Wars The New Era. I'm Ed, and with me as always, my co-host Levi. Levi, how are you today?
Good, sir. How are you?
I am here. I have much to say about these books tonight, so.
All right.
For those of you that this may be your first show, be aware, first of all, that we are spoilers. We are spoilers? Yeah, we'll run with it.
Sure.
This, though, is a Marvel Disney Star Wars comic book podcast. That's what we talk about, not the movies,
yeah. Nope.
Although they are very interesting for the most
yes.
part.
Mm-hmm.
Not the novels, although
no.
now there aren't very many, so it would be pretty easy to read those.
Yep, not anymore.
The comic books, one of the only additions to canon other than the movies that there are available right now.
Yes, and even though they did start in 2015, last year, and this is 2016, we're still basically on the ground floor of the comics themselves, and so I still want to encourage people, if you want to get in on what I think is going to be, well, it has the potential to be a long-running group of books, set of books, do it now. Get the comics back issues. Read up. Listen to our shows, and you can still get in on the ground floor of something instead of being raised decades after the start of, you know, a group, a team, a character. You actually are right here watching it all unfold.
And in that vein, the books we're talking about this episode touch on one of the other few additions to canon that there are, and that is the Rebels animated series that is running right now.
Yes.
Because the books that we're talking about this evening are Kanan issues 6 through 10.
Yes.
Now, those were brought to us by Greg Weissman as the writer.
Mm-hmm.
Pepe Larraz was the artist for four of the books, but in issue 6 or 7, I think it might have been 6, Jacopo Kamani helped Pepe Larraz out for whatever reason. The colors were done by David Curiel, all 5, and letters by Joe Carmena, all 5. So, other than that, go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I'm betting in 6, it was when they got the, or when he got the assistance, because 7, 8, 9, and 10 all have Larraz listed, whereas neither Larraz nor the other gentleman are listed on 6.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I want to say, though, that I thought that 1 through 5 were done by Pepe Larraz as well. So I don't know what happened in 6. I don't know. I mean, all of these books have multiple sequences, multiple time frames represented in each issue. So I don't – it's not like one artist did one and one did the other. So I'm not sure. Maybe
there was just an internship.
Just he got sick, maybe, or just got behind and needed a little boost, or who knows.
Yeah.
All right, next up, we always talk about what our favorite cover was out of the books that we talked about. And in our pre-recording chit-chat, I believe, Levi, that you said that both of us had liked the same cover?
Yeah. I was wrong in my guess for yours.
That's
and
okay.
we... And we ended up choosing the same one.
Issue 8 is that cover.
Yep.
I like it because of who is represented on the cover. The cover image is representative of some of the more enjoyable portions of the chronologically first trilogy of movies, because I always liked the Jedi Council. I liked the characters on it. I like the concept. And that's what we see here as Caleb, not Kanan. Caleb is before the Jedi Council as
Caleb.
As it occurs in the story in that issue. So, I mean, which is also kind of cool that the cover is actually representative of what's going on in the story in that particular issue.
Right.
That turns out to be pretty difficult for cover artists to do a lot of times nowadays for whatever reason.
I don't think it's difficult. I think that what they do is either, and I don't know, that's why I'm saying either, they do a cover to grab your interest, or they do a cover to not reveal what's inside. I'm not sure what their motivation is, but it's got to be one of the two. Because for some reason, a long time now, they've actually not been very representative of the story inside.
Right. And most of the Star Wars covers, let me rephrase that. Most of the A covers for these Star Wars issues have been fairly representative.
Yep.
We really haven't had any kind of cheesecake poses or weird Picasso covers or, you know, anything funky in the A covers. Now, they have done some odd stuff in the variant covers, which is exactly what variant covers are for, so it's to be expected.
Right.
Action figure covers being my favorite variant of all of them, just yep. by the way. I think I said that last episode, too.
Yep.
So, you know, the Star Wars, I guess it's the editors that ultimately farm out the opportunities for covers. The editors for the Star Wars line have done such a better job at that than any other segment of Marvel Comics right now.
Mm.
Now, in the superhero books, I've noticed that their covers have been coming back around to being representative after years and years and years of one not having anything to do with the other and pissing off hordes of fans because of that.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the cover and it's cool and you like it and that's what you expect and you open up the book and that's not what you get. That's going to anger people, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay. All right, here. Hang on. I don't want to trip as I step off my cover soapbox here.
I do want to say one thing about the cover. While of the five.
Yes.
Covers that were of the books that we're talking about tonight, it is my favorite, but I do have to say that I disliked how they drew Mace Windu, who is on the cover. He looks nothing like the character that is in the books, which is relatively close to Sam-El himself.
Yes, that's true. And
this, I don't know what they did. Like the other characters are pretty accurate. They're a little bit of a graphic novel dramatization sort of feel for me, face wise. But Mace Windu, it's like someone told the artist what the character looked like instead of showing the character or the artist what the character looked like. So it's like, just draw a strong featured bald black man. And that's what they did. Instead of, dude, just draw Samuel L.
Yeah, and you would think it's not going to be hard to come up with a picture of Samuel L. to use.
No, if the artist knows, oh, Samuel L. was, oh no, dude, I can find a photo. I can probably do it from memory. But, you know, it's like, just draw a bald black guy in robes. Okay, I can do that. And that's what they did.
Yeah.
And that's pretty disappointing because Mace Windu, he was a cool character to watch, but he's been an even cooler character in this series to read and read about. And to see him on a cover just, well, that's not Mace Windu. I actually had to look at the cover twice and be like, Oh, they're trying for mate. Oh, that sucks. So it was disappointing. I mean, it's still my favorite cover, but I think they dropped the ball on the bald-headed black man there.
At least he didn't give him an eye patch.
Yes, that's true. I bet
you know,
that would have been bad.
You know, there is some separation of characters. He didn't go too far, but
yeah.
That's pretty funny if somebody did that. That would be a good gag cover.
Yeah, it would.
Do an Avengers variant Star Wars cover.
Yep.
Because that would be an obvious one to put on the cover is Nick Fury if you did that.
Yeah, in Jedi robes.
Exactly, right. Alrighty, guys. We'll start out with issue 6 here.
Yes,
and let me read this little blurb because it's been a while since we talked about the first 5. We are told, it is a period of unrest. It's been years since the fall of the Republic when Chancellor Palpatine gave Order 66, wiping out the peacekeeping Jedi Order and rose to the position of Emperor. Since then, the Emperor has ruled the galaxy with an iron fist and small clusters of rebels have begun fighting for freedom. One such rebel group is home to Kanan Jarrus, the mysterious former Jedi named Caleb Doom, who lost his master on the planet Kaler. Now, back on Kaler with his rebel companions, the ghosts from Kanan's past are beginning to catch up with his present. And that little
ghosts.
Blurb answered the question that I thought I had, so that's refreshing. Okay.
Well, see, it says begun fighting.
Yes. And what the issue that I was telling you that I had came up because of something that this book does that I'm not a big fan of.
Mm-hmm. And with the back and forth.
Well, not just that, but we're not learning about Kanan in this series. We're learning about Caleb.
Sure. Oh well, okay. Fair enough. I'm sorry. Okay.
So what it is it's an ongoing series that is a series of flashback vignettes. And I'm not enjoying that type of storytelling at all.
Well, but you can't know Kanan without knowing Caleb.
Well, sure you can. I know Han without knowing Han.
But that's not the same. Han didn't change his name, hide his identity, and have his master killed.
Well, he may have, but we don't know that because they haven't told us his story, and I'm okay with that.
Okay.
You kill my master! So, that's my 70s kung fu throwback, by the way.
Ooh, that was okay. Like any movie ever?
A kung fu movie, yes, absolutely. That's
yeah.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I have – that's probably my biggest dislike about this particular series is that is what they're doing. And I wonder if it's because they have been told the current is being told in the animated series and you can't do that.
I don't know. I mean, I could see them saying that, but – I don't know.
Well, if this is canon, and that's canon, to keep the two from crossing streams, which you know you never do, that would be a simple way to do it.
It would make the most sense as to tell the backstory, but telling the backstory of a character that is enjoyed is going to get you followers however you do it.
True, true. Alrighty, so Kanan and his crew, as that little blurb told us, are on Kaler. They're there to pick up some supplies, apparently left kind of surreptitiously, it looks, to be taken by Kaler's crew to Lothal and supply a refugee contingent or diaspora or whatever the appropriate word would be for that. But as he's going through, particularly the first half of this issue, everywhere he turns, he does not see now. He sees his previous exploits on Kaler. So the artist renderings are a shimmery kind of fluffy light bluish after image of the flashback, if you can after image of flashback. Well, and then the stark drawings are where he is now.
Right.
While he's experiencing that. That's how you can tell the two. And a lot of times they're juxtaposed on the same pages. So, I mean, you know, you can just imagine him focusing closer to get the real life and focusing farther back at the edge of the butte in the distance and getting the flashback.
Right.
And almost as soon as they land, they are set upon, I guess you could say, by Gamut Key, who is the governor of the planet, I believe it was. Might just be the governor of that city, but I thought it was the whole planet.
Me, that's what I thought too, but okay.
And we met him in the first, somewhere in the first five issues. As
I was going to say, in the first half of the issues, yeah.
Yeah. After convincing him that they're not, you know, Caleb and crew Kanan and crew are not doing anything wrong, they then decide the best thing to do is to split up into smaller groups so they can cover more distance, quicker amount of time, and see if they can find out what has happened to the supplies that they were supposed to pick up.
Which weren't there, by the way.
Right, yeah, which kind of started this whole thing, yeah. In searching around, feeling for Kanan, it's more like feeling around. It seems that whereas the other members of the crew may be looking for clues or keeping their ears open or, you know, things like that, Kanan almost seems to be walking by memory. Because he goes to where Kazmir used to have his hideout. That was the smuggler that Caleb first threw in with when he was on Kaler, and they kind of formed this longish-term kind of bond working together.
Right. He was the one that he partnered with, and if our listeners will recall, what was it? He saved him, or...
It went both ways at one point or another, I believe.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But, yeah, he was they were partnered, so.
But in Kazmir's old lair is a gentleman by the name of Tapusk, who was another smuggler that Caleb recalled. Now, all three of these individuals, these names that I've thrown out, Gamut Key, Kazmir, and Tapust, T-A-P-U-S-T, all three are the same race.
Yes.
And I assume that it must be the race indigenous, or one of the races indigenous to Kaler, for there to be so many examples of this one race. But
I believe it is.
That's just something to note. We're not talking about three different species or robots or anything. All three of these guys, and they look darn alike to me.
Oh, okay. So you're going to make that comment. They all look the same to me? Wow, dude.
Yeah, they look alike to me. Yeah. Except for the clothes. That's all that's ever different, you know, is the clothes they wear.
Oh, my God. Seriously?
I know.
Okay.
It's terrible, isn't it?
I do have to say, though, that they are actually, while not, excuse me, overly original, they are original-ish, but they're cool looking. And if you've listened to any other shows, you'll know that I'm a big alien species guy. So when you've got new or different alien species, or just slightly different than your normal humanic bipedal, I'm down. And these guys are pretty cool, actually.
They are bipedal, but that's and they also have two arms, and they have the head at the top of the body, encephaly, or
yes.
I forget what the word, something cephaly for on top like that, like humans. But that's the only similarities. The features, and probably by extension of the features, the physiology is different from humans. They're not. I don't even know if you could call these humanoid. This species.
Well,
really.
I don't know. I always assume that head on the top, two arms, two legs, and a body like a human was humanoid.
Okay, and it could be, I guess, just depending on how you reference it. And I think we kind of talked about this last episode. It's different than the Star Trek Next Generation. Well, mainly the Next Generation species.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because in DS9 and Voyager and Enterprise, other species actually started looking different.
Yeah, exactly.
But on Next Generation, the only way to tell the different species apart was by how many notches they had, or how many eyebrow ridges they had, or stuff
right.
like that. Okay, so there's a confrontation here between Kanan and Kazmir's troops, and by the end of the issue, Kanan has passed out, having signaled his crew that he needs help. So we leave him going to issue 7, unconscious, potentially dead as far as we know, which would be unfortunate seeing as how by issue 6 we hadn't gotten word that the book was canceled yet. So you kind of
right.
hope that he must live, but you don't know that. Issue 7 starts with exactly what you would hope. His crew does find him, gathers him up, and takes him to one of the medical facilities there on Kallar. There in the med facility is where our next flashback story begins, because Kanan is in a Bacta tank going in and out of consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Good old Bacta tanks, I got to tell you.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, running the role playing, man. If you can find a Bacta tank, you're good.
Oh, absolutely. When funny, Star Wars is what actually got me into role playing, and one of the things that the DM always had just available was a good old Bacta tank.
Yeah, see, when you play Swords and Sandals, you don't have that, man.
No, you have healing. You've got your healing spells and things like that. But with Star Wars, you know, you always had a Bacta tank either like on the ship because they had a med bay, or there was a moon or a city that had a Bacta tank for sale or for a price or for something.
Right.
So if the wound was grievous enough to warrant a Bacta tank, you would just barely make it there and be saved, but then you'd have downtime of like weeks or months.
So I guess if you ran into a large Bacta tank that you could put multiple people in to heal, you could call it a mm-hmm. Bacta tank of holding?
If it held an infinite number of people, sure.
Okay. My wife is shaking her head because she knows some of these terms, so she.
Oh no, I know all of those terms, and I'm not
could,
even
oh,
going
I,
to.
I know you did, that. Yeah.
Okay, I'm not even going to acknowledge that.
Oh come on, man, that's excellent. A back to tank of a
nope.
Okay,
no.
Nope. All right,
no. Nope.
So we've got Kanan in a flashback. He flashes back
yep.
to his early. Learnings, his early teachings at the Jedi Temple on Coruscant, and actually we start with his first run-ins with the individual that we'll know as Deepa Balaba, who ultimately turns out to be his master. So this is the beginnings, he is flashing back to the beginnings of that relationship. And indeed, that's what a lot of these scenes in issue 7 are things occurring between Caleb and Deepa as their relationship is growing, as Caleb is growing himself as a young Jedi. I guess he's not even a Padawan if he doesn't have a master yet. So I guess he finally gets accepted into the academy, into the Padawan ship, however they phrased it.
He has not yet taken his test to be an initiate. He does that in this.
I think it's either issue, 7.
Yes, he does that. He does that in this issue, and once an initiate, he can be taken as a Padawan by a master. He and two others are the only ones of, I don't know, his class, his rank, his age that pass, and so are then Padawan learners that can be taken by masters.
So you train at the temple even though you're not officially a member of the temple, and then you test to become a member of the temple?
I don't know that it's about membership so much, because you're obviously a resident.
Okay.
So I don't know that it's necessarily about membership to the temple so much as its levels and what can be done concerning each level that you're able to attain. Obviously, because they start young, and that was the issue with Anakin. He was much older at, what, 8 or 9?
Right, yeah.
If I remember correctly, I read somewhere that they usually start at about 3 or 4 years old is the age that they usually look to get the children so that they can start teaching them then. So you're a pre-initiate, I guess.
I don't know what they
would call that. But then you go through your initiate testing to become a Padawan learner.
Okay. So with 8, we open, and 8, issue 8, there's pretty much one situation that goes through the whole book. The first two issues that we talked about, and then the next two issues, 9 and 10, have multiple things going on, but pretty much issue 8 centered around Caleb and Deepa's foiling a plan by General Cleave, a separatist general, to wreak some havoc. And so most of the story is taken up with our soon-to-be master and Padawan spoiling that plan, such that Caleb is accepted by the end of the issue as Deepa's official Padawan.
Yes.
With that relationship... Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
With that relationship now starting, they head off to Cardo, which is the location of their first actual mission now as Master and Padawan, and that happens right at the end of issue 8.
Right. Now, what I was going to say is, but what is cooler, honestly, than him being accepted as a Padawan to a Master was the introduction of, briefly or whatever, they got a full half page of three, in my opinion, way cool badass new Jedi characters. But what was even cooler than that is one of the weapons that one of them have, which was, the double lightsaber staff sort of thing going on that, what was it?
Right.
Darth,
Maul.
Maul, right? Yeah. Well, this one is actually sort of like that, only that the centerpiece is separated by what looks like even more saber, but on one end is just like a short spike. So instead of like a lightsaber staff, it's almost like a one-sided lightsaber with a spike and a bit of a lightsaber in between. And I thought that was just a really cool idea. It's like, of the things that you can do with sabers, what's a new way to do it? And they did it. They did exactly that with this weapon. And I think it's a really cool weapon, but I think that the characters are cool too. They're hooded and masked. And I thought that that was pretty nifty as well. And these are Jedi. These aren't the bad guys. These are Jedi and presumably masters or, oh, what is
some sort of guard maybe, or
yeah, see, that's what I thought, because they look to be in a uniform. So, but that weapon just stood out to me, and I was like, oh, that's cool. That's, you know, because someone was like, we need a new weapon. You know, I know they were. It's like, oh, you got the staff, and you got the sword, you got this. I want something new. I want something different. Well, design a weapon and let's make a lightsaber out of it. And they did. And I'd use it.
Yeah, I bet they're like temple guards since they're at a temple. And I also notice here, looking at that panel, it appears that the handles must be able to slide up and down the nimbus of energy that the lightsaber puts out, or they move across a transparent chamber that houses the energy. Because you see, the one on the left, his hands are separate, but the one on the right, his hands are together in the middle.
Right, but that's assuming that that's the same weapon that's just being changed. It could be that they specialize in different weapons. Maybe there's not a standardized weapon for these people.
It could, yeah. It's actually two different weapons. I would say that it was probably an oversight in the drawing that it was drawn that way. At the bottom right-hand panel where you see the two guards, you can see them both standing there with their hands separated. Like the dude on the left at the top is holding it, not the dude at the right. So,
yeah, I didn't notice that, but you're right. It does look to be an oversight of some sort.
Yeah. Both are cool. Well,
no, but if you look then at the panel that you brought up, it's got the center saber between the two hand guards.
Right, open.
See the dude?
Yeah. Like the dude on the left at the top panel.
Exactly.
Not together like the dude on the right. So, although you see that back guard, both of his hands are spread out.
Yep.
Because you can see the guard also on either side of the saber there, which means that more than a third of the lightsaber would be handle. And
right, exactly.
I guess that's possible, but it seems like a waste of design there. So, I like them with the hands spread actually better.
Yeah,
than
exactly.
Together.
Because it's a cooler weapon.
It's almost reminiscent of a tri-staff.
Yeah, it is.
As opposed to a bow staff or something like that.
Because as we saw with Darth Maul, I think it was Darth Maul. Maybe it's something else that I watched. The lightsaber can cut the two staves apart, right? Or a lightsaber can cut the two connected lightsabers apart.
Yeah, we saw that somewhere.
Yeah, but if you have a lightsaber in between handguards, in between lightsabers, then you've got your blocking surface, which that's just, you know, common sense sort of workmanship there.
Right. Yeah. The use the energy nimbus itself as that separator rather than something mechanical that can be damaged.
Exactly. So that you can repel the attack using, you know, the space between the hands instead of having to do the space above or below said hands.
Right. Well, that's a lot of talking about a couple throwaway characters there.
Yeah, but see, that's why I love throwaway characters. That's why I love new characters and new weapons, because they're interesting. And because it adds to your dictionary of the world and the universe.
Okay. I feel you. All right. Going into issue 9, we see that stormtroopers, who are constantly sniffing out rebels, have apparently sniffed out Kanan's crew while he's been unconscious healing, and they surround the med facility where everyone is located. Then we go back into Kanan's flashback, and we see several scenes of Caleb on, what was the name of the planet? Cardo? As he is learning, K-A-R-D-O-U. I guess that's how you would say it. I don't know.
Cardo? Meh. I don't live there.
Exactly. He's learning, Caleb, still learning to be a Jedi, still... You see the relationship with him and Deepa evolving still. Also, though, we see the beginnings of a relationship that was referred to in the first set of flashbacks that we had early on in the book, and that is with Caleb and a couple of particular clone troopers.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And that relationship here now is starting as... One of the troopers in particular has kind of taken Caleb under his wing, and that trooper is as green as Caleb is, because that trooper doesn't even have a name. He still goes by the designation of the number of clone that he is.
Right, exactly. He hasn't basically earned his call sign yet, which for them are their names, because they're not... individuals.
Right. And so now you have a foil for Caleb to be represented against, and also we get to see, theoretically, two people at the same point growing together.
Right. Also, of note, to my knowledge, we get to see the first clone with a full beard.
Yes, I noticed that.
Which
as well.
They look completely different when they have facial hair. I thought honestly that they were trying to introduce like a new trooper or clone variant or something in it, because you look at them with the hair and it's like, that doesn't look anything like any of the others at all.
No, not at all. Next, we get into an actual battle here on the planet between the Jedi, now Jedi-led, as we're familiar with, clone trooper contingent regiment, you know, whatever their division would be of labor.
Battalion.
Battalion, okay. On the one side, and then also, as we have seen, the separatist droid robot troopers that we're familiar with, those goldish, long-beaked-looking kind of jobbies that are, like, around by the millions in a couple of the movies.
Oh, the foot soldiers.
Yeah, yeah.
The Roger battle. Roger robot.
Yeah, yes. Running battle between the two sides for most of the rest of issue 9 now, and we see that the good side, our side, Caleb's side, however you want to look at it, wins enough that they can move on to the next front line, the next battle line, and that is going to be Mygeto, which is very similar to Mygeto, I thought.
Yeah, my ghetto. Where are you going to the ghetto?
Megiddo, the valley in Israel that the last battle was supposed to be fought at.
Oh, okay. You were referencing that. I was just thinking you were referencing going to a ghetto.
No. I believe it's Magetto. Is the name of the valley. But that it just caught my eye, and I was like, well, yeah, you could pronounce that Magetto, although they probably don't. It probably looks like Megiddo.
It is Megiddo, because it's in 2 or 3, they actually say the name.
Okay.
I'm sorry, movie 2 or 3, they actually say the name.
Oh, do they? Megiddo? I don't
pretty
remember
sure.
Hearing the name.
I'm pretty sure. It was mentioned, like, in I don't know, in, like, something happening there or the battle or something. It was I remember it being mentioned because when I read it in the book, I was like, oh, I know that.
Okay.
That was in the movie.
Well, you they're much more familiar in your mind than they are mine, so I'll go with what you're saying.
Okay.
Moving into issue 10, we get to Megiddo, and we find that they arrive, they being Depa's forces, they arrive just in time to participate in the third battle of Megiddo.
Yes,
nothing is said about, you know, the results of the other two, or is it a running thing and it's swinging back and forth, or, you know, who knows? We're just told that this is the third battle of Megiddo.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, you know, do they keep losing that hill and having to retake it, or, you know, what's going on?
And I want to assume that it is in this war, the Clone War, but is it the way they wrote it made it sound like this may be being the third. It didn't have necessarily the first and the second to do with the Clone Wars. Like, the other two were from other wars or whatever, you know, from other times. So it's just the way they mentioned it, it was like, I don't know, bigger than what it was? Maybe it was just me.
Maybe what they're trying to tell us is how important Megiddo is, tactically or strategically, I guess.
Well, I mean, it's one of the few places where they describe as the war-torn planet, you know? And if I'm not mistaken, is this – I'll have to look it up. Never mind. I'm not even going to mention that. I'll look it up and see later. But it seems to me there is war and military that is surrounding this planet for some reason, and I'll have to look it up.
Okay. We have another running battle in this issue here on Megiddo. We are introduced to Fenn Rau, who describes himself as an honorable Mandalorian.
Yes.
Which, I mean, I didn't necessarily assume that Mandalorians were dishonorable.
I don't think it's that the race was. I think it's because of one specific one.
Okay. So, because he wears Mandalorian armor, you are to assume that he himself is Mandalorian?
I think so.
Okay. I mean, it could be, but I would just think, you know, just because you have a suit of armor doesn't make you a medieval knight. It just means you're wearing a suit of armor.
No, but it means that you were most likely wealthy enough to get one, or you were in the position to acquire one, which would have required you to be either rich or from the place that gets it.
Okay. I just – because there's only – you know, there's only one other character that I've ever seen tied to the name Mandalorian, and that was Boba.
Jenga.
So, well, okay. Jenga first. Boba
and
first in my mind, because that was the first movie I saw.
Right, but in this timeline, Jenga had the armor, but was also the creator of the entire army. Well, not creator,
progenitor.
Father, progenitor, that's the word I was looking for, of the entire clone army. And it may be known at this time that he was working for the Separatists. I'd have to check this timeline versus the movie timeline.
That would take some digging too, yeah.
But if that, and that's how I took it, was that it is a known thing, or at least it's a known thing to the people. And so what he's saying is, you know, hold on, let me read it. Let's see here. And let's see here. I'm happy to demonstrate that not all Mandalorians have forgotten their honor and obligations. And that right there, I was like, oh, okay, see, that's a dig on Jenga.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I figured it was. I just, yeah. Okay.
Now, one thing I do want to bring up has no real importance other than something that came to mind as I was looking at this page. This character is flying in a squadron of pretty cool aircraft. I don't know if they're just air or air to space, but anyway. They're saving our protagonists from overwhelming forces by, let's say, ground fire or air-to-surface fire. And this was funny to me because the sounds that the firing made when it hit was B-H-U-D-D-A.
Okay. Why is that funny?
Okay, so it's Buddha, 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 Buddha. And the song lyrics came to mind, Buddha, 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 Buddha everywhere. Now, y'all can look the song up, but it made me laugh because I was like, Buddha, 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 Buddha everywhere. And I was like, wow, that's stupid. But seriously, okay. Look it up. I'm not even lying. Look it up, and you'll laugh after reading that.
Okay, I'll have to look it up because I'm not familiar with the song.
Seriously, just have the song lyrics after you've listened to it in your head and then read that, and you're going to be like, wow, he was dumb.
maybe that's where he was at the time.
No, I mean me. You're going to think, dude, he was dumb. But it made me laugh.
Artists all the time talk about the playlist for when they draw and stuff like that, so maybe he was listening to that song too.
Maybe, but it was just, I was like, really? Did he just do Buddha, 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 Buddha everywhere? Wow, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
We end this issue with a couple of face-offs, actually.
Mm-hmm. A dual face-off.
Yeah. The first is Caleb, who faces off against a character that we saw a couple issues ago, but was not substantially introduced to us at that point.
Mm-mm. And if you'll remember, this is actually the brother to that character.
Was it brother?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, apparently it's not exactly shown the demise, but you can surmise that that's what happened. And that this is his brother, and it is actually definitely said that the character that started the commotion at the temple had a brother, and so you can piece together that this is him.
Okay, yeah, you're right. I do remember that. Okay, so now this character is not named, but he is said to be a Kage warrior.
Yeah, she says that twice, and it's like, how does she know?
She's familiar with the race or the military branch or the religion or the, you know, whatever Kage is supposed to be.
I guess, but I got much respect for them because when you read these episodes, guys, the first one that you're introduced to and the things that they're able to do and where they infiltrate, much respect.
Well, and if you I look at a lot of the Star Wars, tropes or memes, and I don't mean those in the negative connotations that they're used today. I'm just not sure what other word that there would be for that. But it's very Japanese in a lot of places.
It can be.
Or Japanese.
Well, I've noticed that with the fighting, with the styles, a lot of it is Asian martial arts. I've also noticed, though, that the I'm talking loud, aren't I? Sorry. I just realized it sounded like I was talking loud to myself. I've noticed, though, especially in these five books, that the shall we say spiritual training is more of a Zen Buddhist style of approaching things. So yeah, you've got the, like you said, the Asian Japanese martial aspect, but then you've got the Zen and Zen Buddhist spiritual aspect.
Right. The main reason that this comes to mind, particularly here, is because this gentleman, this Kage warrior, looks very much like a techno samurai.
Yep.
With that in mind, it would not be a stretch to imagine his brother was some sort of techno shinobi.
Well, what's funny is when I saw his brother first, I thought, because of what he was doing, a Jedi ninja?
Exactly.
And then, of course, we found out that he wasn't a Jedi, but he was no less awesome. And he had more of a ninja-esque thing going on where, like you said, this dude's got sort of a futuristic / steampunk Ronin samurai thing going on.
Yeah, yeah. So it'd be cool if we see some sort of continuation of this, let's call them a Kage race, to see more of these individuals in stories. That would be pretty cool, whether they show up as the samurai or as the ninja aspect, whichever.
Absolutely. I mean, these two characters actually made these five books really awesome. So,
and the second and final face-off we have is between Deepa and General Grievous, who have previously had a run-in. It wasn't detailed in the book, but we know as part of Deepa's journey. This part of her journey that we're seeing, that she previous to where we pick up her story, had an encounter with General Grievous, and it didn't go too well for her.
No, it ended, shall we say, catastrophically for her and her troops.
Yes. And that is unfortunately where we end, because it's not the end of a particular story, but it is the end of the issues we have. So,
right, we're actually now with I believe it was issue 7. We started I guess a new mini storyline or whatever, which was First Blood in the Kanan series, which has honestly gotten pretty darn interesting.
For aspects other than Kanan, yes.
You know what? I am a sucker for a secret history story on characters that I think are cool. And Kanan being what he is, I was introduced to Kanan by the cartoon, and he's a secret Jedi, or a Jedi no longer, but to see his past, and then to see his origins is really cool. And like I said, I'm a sucker for origin stories, so I'm eating this up.
Okay. All right. So that is our five issues. This point, we usually will give our thoughts on whether we liked or disliked the books we have covered in the episode.
Blue lightsaber.
We do that by lightsabers, with a blue lightsaber being a good positive mark, and a red lightsaber being the negative, the opposite. Whatever word you want for the opposite.
I'm going to give a grievous vote, and go with four blue lightsabers up.
Are you okay? Now all of his the same color? I think he had multiple colors,
no.
Didn't he?
Depending, he had multiple sabers from the Jedis that he had killed. But in the last panel of the last book, he's got four sabers, but two colors, green and blue.
Oh, okay. I thought okay, there were at least two colors. I thought there were more.
But in the movie, I believe he had three, if not four. I know he had blue, green, and red. The only other color. Those were the standard colors. The only other color I think that was in the movie was the purple. And that was held by Mace Windu. I know in the cartoon, oh, I can't remember her name. She was Anakin's Padawan.
Ah.
Ahsoka. Ahsoka has two white sabers.
Oh, nice.
Yes. So
she is a blue-skinned race?
Blue-green. Blue. Yes, blue.
Ahsoka had blue. Okay. I think I know the character you're talking about.
Yeah, she was Anakin's Padawan, believed to have been dead, but apparently not.
Cool.
And now a master of great skill.
I am very torn, to be honest, because there are a lot of things about the Kanan book as a whole. These five didn't really do anything to change my opinion. I don't like about the book.
Okay.
My biggest issue is that I have zero buy-in. There is no reason for me to read this book other than it's a Star Wars book. I don't watch the cartoon.
But, like, after the first issue, you still, I mean, there's like, no reason to...
Well, there are things that pique my interest, but it's not with Kanan, nor really the story that they're telling with him. It's secondary characters, it's a tertiary location. It's a, mm-hmm. you know, a concept about something that maybe has been mentioned or something. You know, all of these things that are thrown in for flavor, but not mm-hmm. the story itself.
Okay.
Everybody else, I have a history with. All the other mm-hmm. books have characters that I have a history with, so. There's some amount of interest there that wanes, you know, depending on the character, or waxes, depending on the character, waxes or wanes. But Kanan, no. So the only interest I can get in the character is from the story, and it's just not happening for me.
Okay.
But... That having been said, I will give it a blue lightsaber. I'm reluctant to, but I can't really say that I disliked it.
Well, I mean, you do go into experiences expecting nothing except to be entertained. You've said that often.
Yes,
so if
yes.
we go off that, were you entertained by these five?
For the most part, yes. Entertained enough okay. that I was able to read them and take notes on them and everything. And it didn't feel overly like a chore
Right. It didn't feel like a chore. Yeah.
So, you know, but it's just the main thing is that I cannot seem to find the buy-in into the character or the story. So I'm reading and it's not even filling out per se a portion of the Star Wars universe, because very little of this book is current. It's all in flashbacks to something that happened previously, and that even lessens my interest in what's going on. I want to know what's going on now.
That's interesting, because the way I look at the book is that it's filling in time periods that we didn't get glimpses into during the movies. You know
absolutely
what I mean?
Absolutely true. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And so, if for nothing else, we're finding out more information about time periods that, shall we say, historically we don't have any information on.
True, but it's, I don't know, I guess it's just such a small one perspective filling of that void. You know, we're not telling a bigger story in filling the void. We're telling the one little slice of story as it applies to Caleb / Kanan, which is just an infinitesimal part of the story. Whereas for something like, say, the Star Wars book or Darth Vader, the story is much bigger in filling in gaps or holes or however you want to. It's the story seems to be cutting a wider swath of the universe than what Caleb's is. His experience and his perspective is just so limited.
You know, that's funny. Because I disagree.
Okay.
And the reason is, I think, because you're with the Star Wars and the Vader books, you're reading about things that you're familiar with. So maybe you're looking at it like, oh, well, this is a greater part of the universe. Whereas with Kanan, you don't know, you're not familiar with very much at all, except Grievous here and Mace Windu and all the others. So it seems more finite, seems more of a finite view on the universe. Whereas, honestly, these books are doing about the same thing, just in different areas, in shining lights on aspects of it that we weren't privy to in the movies. I think it's just that with the others, you're more, it feels broader because you know the characters. You know the bad guys, along with the good guys, along with the planets, because it's like, oh yeah, no, I remember that. Oh yeah, no, I know that. Whereas with this, it's like, okay, I know that planet. I don't know that planet. I don't know that person. I don't know that person. I don't know that person, you know? But if you look at it, they're actually doing the same thing.
Okay. It's very possible that it's a bias on my part because of, yeah, the knowledge of – just knowledge. I know this, and there's a lot of this in this book, but I don't know this, and there's a lot of this in this book. So –
right.
One would seem very different to me because of what I perceive as a breadth of storytelling, but it's not. It's that you already have knowledge of where that's going, and it's going somewhere familiar, which is the issue, as opposed to somewhere unfamiliar.
Right. Right. I mean, I see this very closely tied to Lando, in that it gave us information that we didn't have. It introduced new characters, new races. It introduced a new story plot that we didn't even know anything about concerning the cache on the ship, the owner of the ship, and everything else. And that's what this series is doing, is it's introducing new characters, new races, new storylines, new story plots. But it's also weaving in characters that we're familiar with from the movies. Obviously, the chronologically first three in this current one, namely Grievous. But it's giving us information that we didn't have before.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely can agree that you know what you're saying is possible. I can certainly see it as
right.
a possibility. Okay, guys, let's see. No feedback, really. I don't think since the last episode, which I unfortunately held on to for a while because I got lazy in editing it, I don't think we've had any more likes on Facebook than what we had the last time. So, want to let you guys know that our next two episodes will be talking the Vader Down storyline.
Yes.
Six books. So what we decided to do is talk about three books per issue, per
yep.
episode. Next episode will be the first three parts, which are Vader Down, which was a one-shot, Darth mm-hmm. Vader 13, and Star Wars 13.
Mm-hmm.
So those will be the books we talk about next episode, which should be... we should have out in a probably no later than 2 weeks, within about a week or so. So
exactly. And Ed and I were talking, and we decided that if they're going to devote two comics and an independent comic on a storyline, then instead of doing all six comics that had the storyline in it, let's break it up, and it happened to be even, but let's break it up so that we can devote time to the story, to any new characters, to nuances, to opinions. Because if they're going to put this much effort into a sub-story, we wanted to give it an allowance for proper conversation.
True dat. Alrighty, guys. Contact information should you decide to do so. BigTimeNoise.com/Star Wars is the website. On Twitter, you can tweet us at Teal, T-E-A-L, Productions. Star Wars The New Era has Facebook and Google Plus pages, both of which I post the episodes on when they go live, and the Gmail address.
And hopefully he posts the right covers.
Okay, I was going to say, now, I posted the correct podcast.
Episode, yes, but I'm just saying, hopefully
the right covers or label it right. So
hopefully if you post it, you will post the right covers.
Yeah, always, if you guys get confused, always listen to it. That will be the pertinent information. You know, you
yes,
may at times be safe to disregard anything else I post, but listen. That's
as I found out this morning, thinking that I had lost an entire show worth of talking, the issue covers were posted wrong, so I had to listen to the episode to make sure that I had not gone insane and missed an entire episode of talking about issues.
And I know exactly what happened, is that I put off editing it so long that the next episode
right.
was in my head when I was doing all those
exactly.
other things. So that's why it so yeah.
Yeah, you're like, oh, we're doing Kanan. We're doing Kanan this episode.
Yeah.
Okay. Kanan, okay.
So,
but dude, seriously, I thought I had lost my mind. I was like, how can I not remember talking about five issues? How do I not remember looking at these pages? And he's saying that we talked about them, and I don't even remember talking about them. Thank you.
Just trying to keep you on your toes, man.
Oh, and I was, because what did I do? I contacted you, and I'm like, dude.
Yep. I don't think this is right. And I looked at it, and I'm like, my first thought was, what do you mean it's not right? And I went over and looked, and I'm like, yeah, you're absolutely correct. It is not right. As soon as I saw it with the clear mind of not what is coming up, I'm like, yeah, that's not correct at all.
Oh, so, yeah.
Email. Did I give out the email address?
I think you got the Twitter. You did the Twitter, so start from Twitter.
A new Star Wars era is the email address at gmail.com. So I guess actually it's the Gmail address. So I think Gmail now is pretty much synonymous with email, is it not?
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, there are others, but you don't really hear about them too much.
AOL.
Yahoo.
Yeah, I giggle at that one just as much.
So that's Contact Guys. Vader Down.
Wait.
Parts 1, 2, and 3.
Did you do G Plus?
I think I did say that, but I will again. Star Wars The New Era has Facebook and Google Plus pages, because I remember I said I post the episodes there when they go live.
Okay. I was thinking about losing my mind this morning, so I guess I missed that part.
You were still stumbling around trying to recover. I was. So there we go, guys. A week and a half or so until that episode comes out. Also wanted to throw out that the first five issues of Kanan, The Last Padawan, we covered in episode 3. For those of you that may still be listening and haven't listened to everything, that would be a good refresher for those things that we just kind of mentioned in passing in this book, because they were introduced – or in this episode, because they were introduced in episode 3 in the first five issues of the Kanan book.
Yep.
Alrighty, guys. That is all from us. Happy Star Wars listening, and we will talk to you guys again next episode, episode 11, marching right along.
11.
We'll talk to you guys then.
May the Force be with you. And
Star Wars The New Era is a Teal production, and as such is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Non-Derivative 3.0 Unported License. Music provided by freemusicarchive.org.